From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We begin today with national politics from an Illinois perspective. It's been a day and a half since President Trump's historically long address to a joint session of the Congress. Meanwhile, his non-governmental deputy, Elon Musk, continues firing thousands of people who work for us in the federal government. Given everything that's going on in the coming weeks, we plan to bring you a series of conversations with our representatives and senators to hear how they are responding to what's happening. We begin with Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. He's a Democrat representing Chicago's northwest suburbs. Among other assignments, he's the ranking member, the top Democrat, on the U.S. House Select Committee on Strategic Competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. In order to make our schedules meet, I spoke with Congressman Krishnamoorthy on Wednesday afternoon. Representative Krishnamoorthy, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Hey, great to be with you, Brian. Thank you.
What did you think of President Trump's speech earlier this week?
It was long. It was about 100 minutes. I guess he broke a record. But it was interesting for what he said and what he didn't say. In terms of what he said a lot of things that were flat out untrue. He also, he engaged in a lot of exaggerations and hyperbole, which I think a lot of people would expect. What was very interesting that he did not mention, not even one word out of 100 minutes, was the word Medicaid. It turns out that Republicans want to slash Medicaid by upwards of $2 trillion in order to fund tax cuts for, special interests, billionaires, broligarchs, as some people put them, and that those Medicaid cuts will touch 90 million people across the country, including 3.4 million people in Illinois, Brian. And so that's something that I'm extremely, extremely concerned about.
Yeah, well, let's ask about that. You'd mentioned $2 trillion. I had seen $880 billion that the Energy and Commerce Committee has been asked to identify. First, can you reconcile that for us? Where do those numbers come from?
Basically, what's going on is he wants $4.5 trillion in tax cuts. He wants $2 to $2.3 trillion in spending cuts, and then about $2 trillion in deficit spending to make up the balance. And that $2 to $2.3 trillion in spending cuts will be primarily aimed at Medicaid, because he's already said, and his Republican colleagues in the House, I should say, have instructed the committees to basically focus their attention on that program as being the most ripe for cuts. And so, we are hearing about it privately. We're hearing about it through news reports. The set of cuts that you talked about was with regard to only one committee. There are multiple committees of jurisdiction with regard to this program. So the final tally is going to be very high.
Every member of Congress has constituents on Medicaid, right? I was looking through the figures from the Center for American Progress. Every Republican district in Illinois has more people covered by Medicaid than your district does. Do you feel like there's opportunity to work with Republicans to stave off some of these cuts, which, as you said, could affect potentially as many as one in four Illinoisans?
100%. Just take, for instance, hospitals in rural areas in Illinois, they depend on Medicaid for a big portion of their revenue. Take nursing homes in those same places. Same story. They depend almost entirely on Medicaid for their revenue. Something like, at this point, between 30 and 50% of all births in Illinois, all babies, their births are funded through Medicaid, including a disproportionate share in those rural areas. So these Republicans absolutely should be working with people like me to avoid those cuts. Why? Because, A, there are so many people who depend on Medicaid directly in their constituencies, but B, regardless of who you are, whether you're on Medicaid or you're not, the health systems that provide your health care rely on Medicaid. So if they are not able to access that revenue and get reimbursed in a timely fashion for services rendered, they are going to fall into serious financial distress. And as you know, they're already under distress. A lot of them are about to shutter their doors for other reasons. And so this would just accelerate that process.
I want to ask you about, more broadly speaking, how Democrats are responding to what is happening in Washington now. There's a lot of core Democratic voters who are really mad, especially if you go on, you know, social media platforms. And I know that's not necessarily representative of real life or the, you know, the full breadth of opinion in the country. But people are demanding that you and your colleagues should be doing something. Not always clear what that means, but I wonder what you are hearing from people.
I'm hearing the same. And I think there are four things that we have to do, Brian. One, I do think that we have to shine a light on what's going on and the worst of what's going on to make sure that there's transparency. So, for instance, with the federal funding freeze that happened a few weeks ago, it's really important to understand the consequences of that. And as a consequence of our shining a light on it, the Trump administration reversed course. So that's one thing. The second is, we do need to pursue litigation, both inside Congress, but also outside Congress with the state's attorneys general, as well as not-for-profits, coordinating that litigation. It's important in slowing things down for a third party, namely the judicial branch, our judges, to look at what's happening as well and to hopefully stop it. Third, I think that we have to use our votes as leverage within Congress, and I think there will be opportunities for that as well. And then fourth, we need to hold those who are accelerating this chaos or the stuff that's bad, such as these Medicaid cuts, we have to hold them accountable. And there are constituents and others who are getting affected need to basically say, look, this is going to hurt me and I don't want you to do it. So stop.
I hear what you're saying about, you know, using votes strategically, committee hearings, that sort of thing. I think people are hungry for sort of, what would you say, more showy or visible action. I know some of your colleagues walked out on the speech, the president's speech, for example, or didn't go in the first place. I wonder how you think about how to approach that.
I think that that is definitely necessary at times, but I think people want substantive change as well. They don't want just performative change. And so I think right now, especially with regard to Medicaid, but also with regard to other programs that people are relying on, I think it's cold comfort for those individuals for me to say, you know, I did this thing which is symbolic but not substantive. I'm sorry, you're going to lose your SNAP, your food stamps, your food security. And that's very personal for me because I was a child of food stamps and public housing. You know, when my father lost his income when I was a baby, we were allowed to move into public housing and food stamps. So I would not be here but for those programs. So I have to do something substantive to try to help people not lose access to those vital safety net programs.
From your perspective in the House minority, what tools do you have that you can use to stop or slow what the Republicans in the Congress, or maybe even more urgently, what Elon Musk's Doge is doing in terms of firing thousands and thousands of federal workers at, you know, every level of the government?
Well, interestingly, we have a couple tools. One is our committees of jurisdiction, such as the Oversight Committee, on which I sit, has subpoena power. And so we were one vote away from actually bringing Elon Musk before us and Congress to testify under oath about exactly what's happening, something he desperately wants to avoid for legal reasons and preventing exposure. But that type of accountability is important. Secondly, we have to pursue litigation through the committees of jurisdiction in Congress, including the Oversight Committee. And that along with that outside litigation, I think is having a good result right now, at least in terms of delaying the worst excesses of what we're seeing. I think the last thing is, I do think that the president is going to rely on us for crucial votes, for instance, in lifting the debt ceiling, in funding the government, and so forth. I think that if that happens where they come to us as Democrats to rescue them, then we're going to have conditions. And we have to use those conditions to, make sure government functions the way that people expect, avoid these draconian cuts, and then, you know, do whatever else is needed to avoid the chaos and kind of incompetence that we're seeing right now.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. We taped this interview on Wednesday afternoon. One of the people in your office initially reached out to us about bipartisan legislation. You have focused on providing federal tax incentives for small businesses that hire apprentices. I'm sure that's the sort of thing that would be great to talk about in normal times, and you definitely can. But I want to ask you not just about that, but the broader context of why it's important to keep up ordinary legislative work, bipartisan legislative work, in the context of what feels like to a lot of Americans like a constitutional crisis.
I think we have to do both at the same time. I think that there's, let me put it a different way. Every day I have constituents, thousands of constituents who come to me for help with the federal government. Interestingly, I'm relying on the Trump administration in part to help to deliver different services to these different constituents. So you could say that I am cooperating with them and they're cooperating with us, and they're doing their jobs, quite frankly, in answering questions, whether it's figuring out where there's a lost Social Security check or helping with a visa issue or trying to make sure a veteran gets his or her benefits in a timely fashion. And so there's that bipartisanship, you could say, that's happening. And I think similarly, that has to happen with regard to the legislative process. So we're trying to push forward certain measures that I think can command support on both sides of the aisle. At the same time, there's stuff that we don't agree with, which you obviously know about. We don't agree with executive orders that are unconstitutional, such as the one banning birthright citizenship. We don't agree with DOGE having access and Elon Musk having access to our personal identifiable information in the fiscal payment service or at the Social Security Administration. So we have to do something about that. I think we have to walk and chew gum. That's the only way that we can both help our constituents with their everyday needs of government, and at the same time, try to change what we don't like or try to improve something to get to a better place.
I mentioned this earlier, but you're the ranking member on this U.S. House Select Committee on Strategic Competition between the U.S. and the Chinese Communist Party. So far, do you think the actions of the Trump administration, from tariffs to dismantling foreign aid, has that on net helped or hurt the Chinese Communist Party?
I think it's helped them. In other words, we've worsened our competitive position relative to the CCP. Let's just take aid, for instance, the USAID, where DOGE and Elon Musk and Donald Trump have basically almost shuttered the doors of USAID. What that did is it's created a huge vacuum for the Chinese Communist Party to kind of swoop in with their own offerings, as flawed as they are, to try to curry favor and build influence in parts of the world that are very important for us for national security reasons and others. And that's a bad thing. Another example of where we are hurting ourselves is putting tariffs on Canada or our friends, partners, and allies. We are basically essentially distancing ourselves from the very countries that are important for us and our collective national and economic security. And when you weaken your security and you show weakness, you're basically inviting aggression. And that's what we're doing here. We're inviting economic aggression from the CCP in different ways. I would also argue we're inviting other forms of aggression, whether it's from Vladimir Putin or from others who are adversaries of ours around the world. When they see weakness, when they see chaos, they see incompetence, they are cheering because that means that we are advantaging their position relative to ours.
Less than a minute left. Taiwan is obviously a big area of concern with regard to the Chinese government.
Huge concern.
Yeah, go ahead.
Huge concern because, look, I mean, you saw the spectacle, the disgraceful spectacle that happened in the Oval Office the other day where President Trump and Vice President Vance basically humiliated Volodymyr Zelensky. That was a to me, not only us siding with a communist dictatorship over a freedom-loving democracy, thus, you know, making us less safe as a country, but we were sending a direct message. It was like a DM to Xi Jinping, the general secretary of the CCP, saying, hey, by the way, this is how Taiwan is likely to be treated as well. If you were to move on them and they were to look to the U.S. or others for assistance, we would probably treat them the same shabby way that Zelensky is getting treated. And so what that means is, again, I say it shows a sign of weakness on our part. It invites aggression. They could move on Taiwan with slightly greater certainty, more confidence that the U.S. is not going to be there to deter them. And at the end of the day, to me, national security is a lot about deterrence, especially with regard to the CCP or Russia or our other adversaries. You have to deter bad behavior. If you don't deter bad behavior, then you're likely to slide toward conflict. And open hostilities or, God forbid, war is the last thing that the American people want us to engage in.
Congressman Raja Krishnamurti is a Democrat from Schaumburg. He represents the 8th District in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Congressman Krishnamurti, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you, Brian. Thank you.
More to come here on the 21st Show after a short break. Stay with us.